It's the Tiltcast, episode 166. The cast that almost could.
Shit, start over again.
This episode, we talk about Pokemon X and Y, Don't Starve PS4, The Stone, Arkham City, Borderlands 2, Rust, 7 Days to Die, Super
Mario. Wait, stop, it stopped recording, start over again.
The Banner Saga, XCOM, Enemy Unknown, and The Wolverine. Stay tuned.
Fuck, it stopped again.
Welcome back to yet another episode of the Tiltcast, and Matt is not talking.
No.
We have a very interesting episode tonight because Trent's working, Rusty's sick. We were going to have a special guest, but he can't make it because his ride Earl cannot make it either because he had a bunch of stuff going on. So it's just me, Justin. To my right is Jason.
What's up, guys?
And I just introduced Matt.
Yo.
And so we're going to have a very intimate session of the podcast.
Acoustic setting.
Acoustic setting, yes. So, that being said, Matt, you haven't been on this in a while.
No.
What's new?
Nothing.
Oh, come on. Go back out that door.
I bought, and within 2 weeks, beat the newest Pokemon game.
Jesus. It's on DS, right?
Or the 3DS, yeah.
Which one is that?
X and Y.
X and Y?
I got X.
So, what do you mean you got X? Like, I don't understand.
They're like Gold, Silver. There are two different versions, and they... And to encourage play between people and community.
And trade.
And, you know, yeah, you can trade. Some get some Pokemon you can't get with others. So, like, I can only get a certain set of Pokemon through X. Y only gets a certain set. And the idea is that I get with another Y guy. Or
a Y guy?
A Y guy. And we trade.
Yeah. The only true... caveat to that was Yellow.
Yeah.
And they made it so that every Pokemon you could get in Red or Blue was available in the Yellow edition.
Are you getting a lot of street passes working where you work?
Sometimes. I haven't been taking it to work because I have nothing to play. So I don't take it to work.
Come on, they wouldn't let you play that while you're selling shit?
No.
No.
I usually just played it on my break. So, and my breaks went from 15 minutes to like half an hour.
And so they probably got upset about that, huh?
Maybe, if they cared.
Oh. Your job's one of those jobs that doesn't really keep track of that kind of thing.
As long as...
Well, they do, but as long as I do my job.
And as long... And I know where he's working. As long as somebody else is there covering, you're good.
Yeah.
Yeah, with my job, it's like, so X person went, you know, 15 minutes over their break, I gotta talk to them about it, kind of stuff.
Yeah, I remember that crap.
I get like, down to the hundredth of a second, like, what everybody's breaks. I don't ever address it if it's, like, close. Like, if people go a minute over or something, I'm not gonna yell. It's just, I get my ass chewed out if people are over consistently.
Now, minute over each break...
Probably
you get your ass chewed, and then you gotta chew some ass. But.
It's a trickle-down effect. It's like the trickle-down economics to work. It just sets us
which I never, in my position, as long as I'm answering the calls and doing what I'm supposed to do, I go, I sit in there and watch SportsCenter for 30 minutes because it's nothing to do and I'm smoking cigarettes. I don't see a problem with it.
Yeah.
As long as my job gets done.
We don't really have slow days where I work.
Yeah.
It's just balls to the wall. 24/7. Well, for some people. So, just Pokemon? Played a lot of Pokemon?
I downloaded Don't Starve.
Oh,
I played
for
a little
PS4?
Bit of that. Yep. It's free right now for the PlayStation Plus.
What's different about it versus the PC version?
Nothing but the control scheme so far.
How does that work on a controller?
A lot of your shoulder buttons are your inventories. Like, I think L1 or L2 opens up
the crafting menu?
Yeah, the crafting menu, and then, like, R2 opens up your bag, and actually, when you open your bag, it actually pauses the game for you to scroll around.
Oh, man, that would help for certain situations.
It does. I don't know how well it pauses it. You know, like, I only played it for a little bit, and I was never in a bad position where I couldn't just play with my inventory a little bit.
Yeah, I downloaded it because, you know, it was free. but I haven't touched it because I've been so busy with other things.
Yeah, it's just one of those. It's you can, you know, like triangle is to pick it, X is to inspect it. You know, the buttons get more complicated the more actions you can do, but it also depends on what's in your inventory.
That's cool.
So, you know, yeah, it's neat. I like it. It's fun. It was fun. Graphics were
the same, basically.
Basically, it looked a little sharper, a little cleaner. But really? Then again, I haven't played the PlayStation version in a while. And
well, and you don't play it on your TV.
I mean, the PC. Well, no, I played it on my monitor. I just haven't played the PC version in a while. I don't know how much it's been cleaned up.
Yeah, because it looked like they were stretching it a little bit. It looked like maybe they put it in basically 720p.
Right. And now, you know, because of the PlayStation 4, it's 1080. It looks a lot cleaner. So
I'd be curious to try it on there. I've been meaning to for a while. But, you know, video games.
Yeah. And then
so this is one console port you would say not a whole lot's taken away from?
No. It's pretty... It's just getting used to that control scheme.
Do you know, how far did you make it?
A couple days. You know,
eating a lot of carrots.
Yeah, lots of carrots. Because, you know, usually on my first few days... I mostly just explored, open up the map to find out where everything is. And then I got to that point where I needed to start crafting a lot more stuff, so I had to hunt down a lot of gold and
build the alchemy station and all that shit.
Yeah, and they even added one other thing that you have to build in order to unlock other things, and I don't remember what it was. The shadow gym? The triangle thing with the shadow gym in the middle?
The respawn point?
No. It was like dark something.
Ah, I forgot.
Yeah. It was one of their last ones before me and you really stopped playing. Yeah, I think you got to build one of those in order to get some of like the night swords and all that other stuff. But
I never got really, really decked out on my weapons except for, what is it, the spear?
Yeah. And the tentacle.
The tentacle whacker.
Yeah, the tentacle whacker. So... And then
I always find it's easy to, like, you find a bunch of rabbit holes, and then you find, like, some woods, and then you find some rocks nearby, and set up camp there, and then I'll just, like, put traps over the rabbit holes and catch a bunch of rabbits until the Krampus comes and tries to eat you.
Yeah, I summoned a treant.
Or you kill a whole forest.
Well, I needed charcoal, so...
You burned down a forest.
Yeah.
They don't like that.
Yeah, and I went insane, close to virtually insane at one point, because I was digging, I had to... To make a fridge, yeah, they added you have to have like gear parts. So one of the exploration trips I did was trying to find a graveyard, and you know every grave you dig up, that's like 20 points of your sanity. And so by the time I found one, I was like virtually insane. So
yeah, he starts to trip out. It's pretty cool.
Yeah,
I've really been kind of amazed at how far that little indie game has given me. Like how many hours of time I've sunk into that. And I haven't beat it. Well, I don't know if there is a beating that game.
Yeah, there is. One of the patches, I think before you quit playing, they added in a story mode.
Yeah.
So you have, you know, you have the world that you start out in.
Yeah.
Where it's just basically a big sandbox. And then you'll find gear parts or machine parts, and then you got to find this altar, and then you make... What's his face's head?
Yeah.
And you click on him and he'll say, are you ready to go to the next world? And that starts the story. Mm. And essentially you go into the next world and each world has a different climate and thing you have to live through to find the other parts to go to the next world again. If you die within that world, you go back to the sandbox world.
See, I never got far enough to do that. I got to the point where I found one of those shadow altars or whatever it is. And I was like, man, I really need to have better shit before I do that. And then I survived like another 2 weeks and died.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the hard part is just getting geared up. Because you don't know what world you're going into. I think it's all procedurally generated. So like, one world... I know one world is all like snow and ice. And it's never... You know, you've got like 2 hours of daylight before it's dark. And you're, like, constantly freezing. And you only have limited bag space. So it's not like you can
take a hot rock and...
Yeah, I keep a hot rock with you all the time. But it's hard to make a new hot rock because you got to, you know, resources are limited.
Right.
You know, whenever you get to the new world. So you got to be very prepared for virtually everything.
Yeah, that game's not for everybody. I mean, it really dabbles in the hardcore gaming side of things. It doesn't seem like that kind of game would be. But that game is a hardcore game.
Yeah, it is. It's very fun. And I was trying to think of something else I played on the way over. I don't remember. Played more Hearthstone. Played more... WoW.
Yeah, I jumped on Hearthstone a couple times looking to see if you're online. I was like, oh, I guess he's not. Just schedule's just so much different than mine is.
Yeah, I can whip you pretty good.
Well, at this point, with all your level up characters.
Well, the level doesn't matter. Yeah, it does. No, it doesn't.
Yeah, it does.
The only thing you get is gold cards out of it. Level doesn't matter. It just depends on how much your...
Your deck has got to be superior to my deck at this point, at any point.
Well, yeah, but if you've learned anything from Magic, you can still work through a superior deck. You just got to know what you're doing.
Right, yeah. And that's the thing is, you know, it's a lot harder, but it's there. It's like that freemium thing. Like, you just earn your gold. You know, do your quests, earn your gold. Win 30 games, win 30 games, you get 100 gold, you buy a pack.
Right. Know?
Or you can just plop down $50, buy 40 packs, and get all the legendaries. And, you know, and even with all that, it's you got to know how the deck, you know, how to manage your mana, how to manage your cards, what kind of cards go into the deck, you know, what synergizes well with other things. It can get very complicated, very easy to play. Kids play it all the time, they love it. And it's very complicated with, like, when I play Chris Ingman. Like, he comes up with these weird deck strategies, and they just blow me out of the water.
Yeah, but he's... All right, well, he's a different level of gamer, so he's just weird like that.
Yeah, so eventually I looked up enough death lists and listened to enough podcasts, and, you know, I eventually got something together that are pretty much... We go toe-to-toe now, so...
That's good.
Yes. Always better. So
you think, how close is that to final build at this point?
There's still some bugs in it. Dancing Minions is one of those. I don't know if you ever saw it.
Dancing Minions?
Yeah, when you go to put down a card, the minions will dance on the board.
Okay.
Like, they'll shift around from their original position and then shift back. And this causes a problem for some of the cards, because some of the cards have very specific... Like, there's a Defender of Argus. If you put him in between two characters, he makes the two on the left and right of him taunts. And taunts are basically like tanks. And whenever they start dancing, it taunts the wrong ones.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah. And then, just there's little things like that, just little bugs, floating cards, cards that overlap other cards, so you can't use one card over the other. And I mean, for the all in all, the outside of like balancing cards, it's pretty much done.
They're like, still not doing a lot of animations.
They're adding a lot in for like some of the bigger, better cards. They're gonna be adding like if you went to BlizzCon or bought the virtual ticket, they gave you a special card, the Elite Tauren Chieftain. And when you go to throw him down, a little sign comes down that says ETC, and like it turns into a rock concert with like light shows and fire and sparks and everything, and then he'll come out onto the field.
Interesting.
Yeah, and they're planning on doing this for a lot of the legendary cards to make them more awesome, I guess.
I always thought it was weird how like they'll cater to a niche market that hard, because I mean, think about how many people literally can go to BlizzCon, like what, 50,000?
Well, yeah, less than that.
So you're talking about an even limited number of that for the cards, you know what I mean? So,
well, and they want to keep special things special. I mean, they did that in Warcraft all the time, you know that. Like whenever they took out the Mounts of Ulduar. Like, once everybody could out-gear it and basically clear it, like, you know, do all the heroic achievements, you know, They took out the mount because it was too easy to get the mount at that point.
Well, I was done playing by that point.
Well, you were done playing by that point, weren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no? I quit when we were clearing Ulduar.
Right.
Like on.
Yeah, shortly thereafter. Like, I think when they got into the Ice Crown Citadel is when they were like, okay, well, after this patch, we're pulling the pet or the mount because we think it's going to be way too easy and we want that mount, the special mount, to be special. So.
Yeah, I quit while it was still hard.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things. You can sit in your underwear at home, eating Cheetos and drinking Mountain Dew, and pay $40 or pay $150, gas money, flight money, expenses out there, all that other stuff to go to BlizzCon. And a virtual ticket, you know, $40, you get all the content you get at BlizzCon. You don't get to talk to anybody, but, you know.
Essentially a pay-per-view on your computer.
Yeah. And they showed on DirecTV, but it's like the coverage that they do has gotten like worse. So.
That's crazy. I wonder how many people buy the e-tickets.
I don't think they've ever put out like a graph on that. I know I do every year. Even the year I won that contest to go to BlizzCon, I still ended up buying it anyway.
Why did you buy the virtual ticket if you were going?
Because I didn't know I was going until afterwards. I had bought it before. The minute they say, okay, virtual ticket's up, buy mine. So.
At least, like, oh, I can go.
Well, damn it.
That was last year, wasn't it?
No, it was 2011.
Was it that long ago?
Yeah
dude.
Because, what was it, 2012 they skipped because they want to do every other year. I don't think they're going to do it now. They tried that in 2012. But they're going to do every other year. And in the between years, they were going to do big esports tournaments with their StarCraft and, you know, all that, like, the rating and stuff like that.
Oh, I gotcha. They got an esport thing for rating now?
Well, kind of. They get the... Well, like they invite two, like, of the top guilds. And they basically go... Start here, get to the end as fast as you can. And usually it's very specialized. You know, they'll pick a few bosses out of the latest raid, and they'll tune them a little bit higher. And, you know, one tries to beat the other one, and whoever gets to it wins. Whoever beats the last boss in it. Usually, like, 4 to 5 bosses.
Yeah, I tried to get to that level. Never quite got to that level.
You gotta put... I listen to a lot of those top-end raiders, the 1%ers. They put some time in. They take vacations for, like, weeks. And it's usually, like, 10 to 12 hours a day just doing nothing but that raid. Taking, like, lunch break, like a job.
Until I can't be that hardcore in any game, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
It's like, there was a point when Dota first released, and I was like, man, I'm going to make a team, and we're going to go pro. And, yeah. The game's... takes more dedication than what I can give.
Yeah. And it's a lot like Hearthstone. Within a month of the game's release, they had their very first professional Hearthstone player in Trump. Like, he's fully sponsored and everything, and gets on stream and Twitches all the time, and there's tons of tournaments going on over the place, and there's no money in it yet, but there's definitely...
You've heard about that new thing they got going on with Heroes of the Blizzard or
Heroes of the Storm, yeah.
I actually watched the Twitch feed for that the other day. That didn't look bad.
Yeah, it looks fun.
I know you're not very big into MOBAs, but I'd like to give it a shot.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to give it a shot because I know the characters. I have light knowledge of the style of game. And it looks relatively, again, you know, easy to play, hard to master. You know, some of the more experienced MOBA guys are probably going to get in there and eat it up, you know.
It looked like they were doing some more stuff with some of the towers, and some of the map styles weren't total Dota or League of Legends.
Yeah.
I thought it's an interesting take. Like, people are either going to like it or hate it, because people that play a lot of MOBAs are like, all right, 3 lanes, that's all there is. Because Smite, League of Legends, Dota, Infinite Crisis, all these games are based off that 3-lane model now.
Yeah, and they still have the three lanes, but they also, like, each one of them has a different, you know, all your characters are together, so you all level up the same. I don't know, I can't remember if they keep talking about using items, like purchasing items and whatnot. You know, it's, the one that I saw recently was the Cursed Mines, where you go down into the mine and you collect skulls, and once you get to a certain amount of skulls, you can summon a bone golem. And these bone golems are just like these huge beasts that will just eat through like towers and stuff, or just eat through your minions and or your creep.
It's kind of an interesting concept, like just mixing it up a little bit with MOBAs.
Yeah, and it's one of those that, you know, if you don't go down there and keep them from getting all the skulls, they're going to just keep dropping bone golems on top of you. And, you know, they're going to lay waste to everything you have, you know. And if you go down there to try and keep them, like, you're leaving yourself open up top. I mean, there's going to be a lot of strategy. It's not going to just be, like...
Protect your tower.
Yeah. You know, somebody goes and jungles, but you may jungle later than you normally would, and... it just seems very interesting, I guess. Especially somebody who didn't like MOBAs that much.
Yeah, I'd like to see them mix it up. I was cautiously optimistic with it, just to see them do something different. Something like the Warcraft model works for some people, but like having that drop in, drop out kind of style, you know, really appeals to me now more than it did before. It's really hard for me to get committed these days with the way work is and life and everything.
Yeah, and
else
I think that they were saying that like the estimated time of every game is going to be at like 20 to 30 minutes at max.
Which is good time.
Yeah. Like, versus, you know, like 45 to an hour for...
Yeah, Dota's anywhere from about... A quick Dota match is 30 minutes, and then a long Dota match is about an hour.
Yeah.
So then you got League, which is about 20 to 30 minutes, and Smite, which is lightning fast, 15 to 20, 25 minutes. Long Smite match is 30 minutes.
Yeah, and it could go shorter or longer depending on the skill level of the players. So...
I'll give it a shot. I put myself up, or sign myself up for the beta. Hopefully I'll get access.
Hopefully.
Eventually Blizzard will do it on Blizzard time and we'll get the game at some point. But, I mean, if they do it like I think they did the pay model on Dota really smart. Like, personally, I've spent some money on it. I spent money watching some matches because, hey, whatever, I'll support that. Just giving money to players and giving a little bit of money to the Dota people. And then I've bought some outfits because, hey, cosmetic stuff is cool. Bought them on sale, like they had them on sale for like $1
the
other day, and I bought, like right around Christmas, I bought like 5 outfits for like $5. So I was like, you know what, I'll spend $5 in this game.
Well, knowing them, they'll probably think of a way, because there are people that
like
don't want to spend the money. Like, I don't want to spend the money on, I know it's hard to say, but I don't want to spend money on skins.
But I don't have a problem with it if I've sunk like more than 50 hours into something. Like dropping a few bucks, because at that point it feels like a tithe. I feel like I've gotten this much enjoyment out of somebody's blood, sweat, and tears, and if they've done a good job of it, I don't have a problem with it. They're kind of like Warframe. Like, I'm not going to jump way into that because we've played so much. Me and Rusty have, at least. You know, I ended up dropping some money into it, but I've got like 130 hours into that game. Like,
right.
It does not bother me that I spent about $35 on it. I've spent as much time on that as I've spent in...
Well, but seeing that, you know, I guess it would depend on how you felt about Hearthstone, too, because, you know, the minute they opened up the shop, I bought packs like crazy, because, you know, I can kind of get competitive with cards. I feel better about spending money on the virtual cards than I do about skins.
Right, but then it comes to that whole pay-to-win thing.
Well, and everybody keeps pointing that out, and it's really... You can earn those cards without ever spending a dime. Like, they showed, especially at BlizzCon, like 45% of the top-end Hearthstone players have never spent a dime on that game.
Well, it's because they've been dedicating the time to actually learn.
Right, do all the quests and get all the gold and, you know. But that's something you can do. It just depends on if you want to take a shortcut or not. And I just like the cards. I like the game. I like collecting, you know.
Virtual things.
Well... you know, like, whenever I played the actual TCG, the World of Warcraft trading card game, like, I had real hard time not going to the store every other day and buying, like, 5 packs just to How much get are the those cards? Specs? They're probably been like $2-4 a pack, and I'd buy like five of it at a time.
So you spend like $10 to $15 every other day.
I could if I would. I had to stop myself a lot to make sure I didn't do that.
Damn, that could get expensive fast.
Yeah. See, so I have issues like with buying cards.
Clearly,
I can't say anything. I did the same thing with Magic when it was big. I can't tell you how many thousands of dollars I worked my ass off for, and I just spent it on Magic cards.
Well, and what's bad is this Hearthstone podcast I'm listening to, like two of them are, I wouldn't say, they talk about, like, they compare it to Magic a lot. One of them's a Magic player, one's like a casual Magic player. And they play it a lot. And, you know, I used to play it back when I was younger.
Yeah.
And every time I go to the grocery store or Walmart and I see those packs and decks on the, you know, counters up there, I'm like,
you're tempted.
Oh, I can go back and play some Magic again.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, day nine started the Spell Slingers where he, you know, invites a bunch of his geeky friends. Now? Yeah, he plays Hearthstone and Magic. And
you he know, plays and, like Hearthstone, Magic, he plays StarCraft, and what else?
Oh, a bunch of other stuff. I think there's some days that he just plays video games and stuff. But he'll invite friends over and they'll play Magic the Gathering. And, like, you know, I'm watching them play and I'm like, I really want to play Magic again. I want to build an all fire deck or an all red deck. And but I know that's dumb at this point.
Red and black, man. I had a red and black deck that would just decimate people.
Yeah, I want a full. I just want a full red deck.
I played Magic since I was a Boy Scout, so I didn't have shit to do out in the woods.
Yeah. Those good old days hanging out by the band room. Yeah, playing Magic in the middle of the floor in the hallway.
For me, it was, you know, the parents saying, all right, so it's Boy Scout time, and we're going to send you to, let me go to all these different things. And then, of course, my dad was one of the leaders, so he planned all these things where, like, all summer, every weekend, or for days at a time, we basically went up camping. So that just basically meant that my parents were free to fuck or do whatever the hell they were doing.
Right.
Get us out of the house for most of the summer.
Yeah.
Me and my brother out, play fucking Magic. They didn't have shit to do. I mean, like, you only earned so many merit badges.
My parents just dropped me at Wizards for hours on end.
Is that place still around?
Yeah, Wizards.
Yeah, they're all sitting
there. Yeah.
They mostly do, them on top deck mostly do Magic and 40K games now.
Yeah.
God, 40K, that's a long game. I can't, I played that one time. I was like, man, this is long. It's longer than Risk.
Yeah, we did play it that one time.
A long game.
How many damn dice do I need? 18 dice? What the hell?
That's another game I spent way too much money on.
Say, Lynn, where you used to work, like, still paints figures.
Yeah.
He's doing work.
I don't get it. I don't get it at all.
I never.
Yeah, he's been, like, we got this dude where he used to work, man. He has got a fucking collection of Warhammer characters. He's good at it, too.
He's a good fucking player, but the dude spends, like, as much as you could buy a decent used car for, that's what he spends on 40K a year in miniatures.
Yeah, he's always painting them.
No. Just
fucking he and his art project.
I want, just give me a Crown Royal bag, fill it full of dice, and give me a piece of paper. We're good.
Right?
Speaking of that, we got our big annual game coming up for your birthday.
Always on my birthday.
Just works out that way, right? Or you just demand it.
Well, yeah, that's true too. That, you know, how else are you, we never make plans to hang out anymore, so I have to sacrifice my birthday to get my friends together to hang out and have a good time.
We need to bring a bunch of alcohol.
Maybe.
I want to bring some beer.
There's at least got to be that.
Maybe. We'll see. It all depends on how, like, kids go. Like, if we're going to be able to just, like, leave them for an entire weekend somewhere, or we're going to have to, like, take them back in a couple, you know.
Leave them with your dad for a while. He'll have fun being a grandpa. Hey, Dad, here's 6 kids.
Have fun.
Pick them up Sunday night.
Yeah. Yeah, to explain to the listeners, like, me and Matt, a group of people, have been having this. Well, we used to game a lot, what, about 10 years ago? Has it been that long?
Damn, it has been that long.
Like, roughly. We did about every weekend for
a while. How long have you been here? You left that house.
Oh, you mean when I was living over there behind the magic shop?
Mm-hmm.
I left there in 2007.
So, yeah, about 8 years, 8, 9 years now.
Yeah. And then moved to Kansas City in 08. Came back in 09-ish.
Because that was the last time we really played.
This will be the... Is this only the second annual game we've done? Did we do one more?
Yes.
Once we got Dave back into gaming?
Well, it's the only thing that works out for us.
Yeah, because you guys are all busy.
Kids. It's not busy, just kids.
Yeah, I'm never busy. I'm too busy to game. Anything else been going on, man?
No.
Nada?
No, I've been trying to think, and there hasn't been really a whole lot.
Well, it's been since Game of the Year episode that you've been on.
Yeah, and I'm trying to remember. That's about it. I'm going to go pick up Golden Sun for the DS.
You got Trent addicted to Zelda.
Did he get it?
Yep. We talked about that for a little bit last show.
He loved it. It's great. It's awesome. It's all those
games. If I get a little bit of extra money, I'll probably pick one up too. But I haven't gotten to that position yet.
Oh, I want to, but we haven't fully recovered from me being out of work for 2 months yet.
And buying a car?
Yeah. Oh, buying the car is not hard. Just buying the car to pay the taxes on the car is going to take all of my next-gen system reboot money.
We still got a ways before a lot of stuff comes out. I mean, a lot of stuff's really not going to hit till this summer.
Yeah, I know. I just want to try to have an Xbox One for Titanfall.
I'll wait for the PC version.
I'll tell you this much. Plays pretty good.
Shut up.
Can't say much more than that.
I like it so far.
No, we got some alpha access. But
they said they were going around.
Well,
there's rumors that it's going around. I think they say it, one of them said it was an alpha, but it's pretty much almost like a beta, or they're testing it or some weird.
Per NDA, I can't say much. I'll just say, just release it. It's already got I don't know how long it'll last, how long the fun will last, but a little bit I got to watch was
amazing.
Yes. Fairly final product. But moving on from that.
They're paying you for that, right?
Huh?
They ain't paying you for that, right?
Nope. Nope, not at all.
That's some news I like.
Jason, what about you?
Not much. Went back to, because I haven't been able to get anything new, I decided to go back and play through Arkham City again. And because they won't let me split the cost on Dragonborn so I could just pick it up with what you gave me for Christmas and
$5 extra.
Evidently, Bethesda's not allowing that to be split between anything you have in your Microsoft account and a credit card.
Oh, that's stupid.
Yeah. So, I went ahead and just bought more packs for Arkham City and just started playing through it again.
Fair enough. Is that game pretty solid?
Arkham City, yeah.
Oh, Arkham City, yeah. I thought you were talking about the reboot.
No.
Yeah, Arkham City's pretty fun. I played the shit out of it.
I love Arkham City. I never played it back through on New Game Plus all the way, so that's what I'm shooting for this time.
So how far are you back into it?
Not very far. I just hit Grundy.
Okay.
Tonight.
That's a fun fight.
Yes, it is.
I really like how they did Grundy.
Though,
isn't that where you have to electrocute him?
Yeah.
Yeah. Though it's all too easy going back through it
when you know like, the fights.
Yeah. So I'm like, oh man, I can already go back over here and do this main mission, or I can just go ahead and go to the points for these side missions that I already know where they are.
I always have a hard time with games like that. Like, you're like, man, you get so caught up in the side missions, you almost forget about the main story altogether. Shut up, man.
Oh, the various problems with open world games.
Whatever. What was that open world game you like a lot?
None.
No. We got into this conversation.
What was it? I don't remember.
He refuses to label it that way.
What game was it? We got into a conversation about this.
I don't remember what it was.
Oh, now you don't remember it.
No, I'm trying to remember. What was it? Zelda was a little open worldy. Ish.
Did you play Wind Waker?
Yeah.
That's pretty open world. Like, that's so open world, you have no direction.
Well, yeah, but there's no side missions.
Everything's a side mission in that game. It's like, oh, let's land on this island and do this thing. And then,
well, I never did that. Where do I go next? Okay, I just go. I just do stuff.
Yeah, whatever. That's my problem with that game, is it's so old school that I have to write down what I'm doing. Because if I put it down for a day, I forget what the hell I'm doing. If I picked it up right now...
Just talk to the boat.
I forget totally what's going on.
Talk to the boat. The boat told you where to go.
Oh, yeah. You can talk to the boat.
All that's true, but you just gotta remember, at least with Arkham Asylum,
Borderlands 2.
That's what it was.
I actually have a little bit of fun with that.
But Arkham Asylum and Arkham City, I can speak for this because I haven't played Origins yet, but I imagine it's the same. It's like Borderlands. Sure, there's some open world elements to it, but it's still fairly straightforward as far as it tells you exactly what to do and gives you an idea of where you need to go to progress the main story.
I can't believe you just brought up Borderlands 2, because that was one of those games that I was playing again with you, Matt. I mean, you got, what, about 5 or 6 hours into it?
Yeah, something like that.
And we put it down 2 weeks ago, and I haven't picked it up. Well, I did pick it up. I played it obsessively for one day while I was off, and I got like 8 hours in. I was like, fuck, I don't want to drive around in this fucking car all over the place shooting other cars. Then I put it down and started playing something else. And I forgot all about it again. I'm never going to get to do the old Tiny Tina's thing. Because I hear that's really good. But
I hear all the DLCs so far for it's really good.
Okay,
I just haven't bought it yet.
My argument on why that is good to do the side missions in the open world stuff in Borderlands 2 is because you can actually... It's a better chance at loot to progress your character.
Well, isn't that the same in a lot like Skyrim?
No, because you can't do that, and you don't get, like, advanced boomerangs in Arkham City.
You
don't get, like, you know,
You unlock, like, you unlock better
experience. Yeah, you actually... By doing the side missions, you gain experience, which in turn allows you to unlock upgrades for your equipment, your
suit
stats.
But it's not necessary.
Yeah.
You can beat. I only ever grabbed.
It's not necessary in Borderlands.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
Get better sniper rifles.
Well, you can get better skills in Batman.
But you don't need them.
Oh, yeah, you do.
You pretty much need those better items in Borderlands.
Dude, you can get those.
I beat them without ever upgrading anything.
You can get those quote better items at random from the shops. Your argument is invalid.
No, because I've never found that sniper rifle that I have right now. And I picked up that one of our missions.
Yeah, but it's so random.
Yeah, but...
You know, 16 bazillion guns. It's all random. We could do that just playing for the main story.
And actually, you think the sniper... I know which sniper rifle you're talking about. If you think that thing's killer, you get much better ones out of the machines. You just got to go back and check them obsessively.
I play
the slot machines in Moxie's thing until I get Illyrium so I can build up my ship. Or randomly I got a really kick-ass revolver out of there one day. Got a fucking orange item out of there the other day, a couple weeks ago.
Oh yeah, I played that more. That's what I did. I played more Borderlands 2. And I saved Roland.
Oh, you saved Roland?
Yeah, I saved Roland.
Nice.
I went through and I realized my refusal to get anything elemental was hurting me a whole lot. Considering, like, the hitbox for the head of the robots is literally their eyepiece.
Right.
Their 2-inch eyepiece on the left side of their face. is incredibly hard to hit all the time.
So you get corrosive weapons and just tear them apart.
Yeah, I still beat it, so it doesn't matter. I'm patient.
Yeah, I did it all with corrosive SMGs.
Waited.
I got my Necromancer out. I'm building Nerf to be like all different elemental types, you know, so the different elemental damage. And she's pretty fun. Like, I think she's still kind of easy mode no matter how you build her, because that robot goes out and kills a bunch of shit. Because of your death trap, like, you can just say, all right, go roam. And there's actually a build where you can almost summon that thing almost as fast as you can. Like, the cooldown on it's like 30 seconds, and you can just resummon.
You know what? All I need is all the elemental sniper rifles, all the different elements, with a fairly high rate of fire, and elemental SMGs, revolvers. All I need to clear that game.
You guys got me through Chromarax. You, Holt, and Rusty.
Yeah, but I got through Chromarax because I accidentally found the glitch point for Chromarax.
What, like between rocks or something, or what?
Yeah, the point, there were two points on that map where if you got in those points and just stayed there, he couldn't see you, and he would glitch and just stay in the same point, so you could just hit all of his vitals.
Well, that just feels like cheating.
Yeah, but that was the only...
If it's kicking your ass, that's not cheating.
That was the only way to beat that...
Creative use of game mechanics.
That was the only way to beat that boss without soloing him as a siren.
We just gotta get your buddies together.
Yeah, but even when I took you through it, I still exploited the glitch and just let you die. But hey, you got awesome loot out of it.
Yeah, I do. And then I just put down Borderlands 1. There's still, like, the one thing I want to do with that, I want to do the Tiny Tina's, you know, tower of whatever the fuck it is.
See, and that...
Just because, like, Dr. Ned's zombie, whatever? The one in the first one, was it Dr. Zed or Dr. Ned? The zombie island?
They changed it to Ned. It was Zed, but they changed...
His brother Ned or whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah, Dr. Ned's zombie island or whatever was, like, the best DLC they'd ever made for that game. It was such a good DLC because it was long. It had a really cool theme. Everything was themed toward zombies, but they did a really good job with the zombies. Yeah. With the different classes, and it just felt like a different Borderlands game, but still Borderlands.
If you wanted to really survive it, you had to use fire elemental weapons.
I'm reconsidering my position because of all those stupid robots. It wasn't hard. I think I did it like once on the boss, but it wasn't hard. It was just, if I missed that headshot on that little eye,
yeah,
you know, I would do very minimal damage and they would still come at me. But if I hit that headshot, man,
you're playing Zero.
Yeah.
You going for the sniper build then?
Yes. And I'm pretty much just lay waste to everything. If you weren't busy with that psycho running into everybody's face, like, you could have just stood there and I just killed everybody.
Yeah, that was... I'm still trying to play they got the psycho class for Borderlands 2.
Yeah.
And he gets health back when he goes into berserk mode, but you gotta melee everything, which is a little bit difficult in that game, since it's not really built for melee. Like, in the melee, I've never felt that strong unless you got somebody who was just really built for melee, like Brick in the first game. And it's just, I don't know, because he takes so much fucking damage. You need a better shield, I guess.
Well, they didn't really build Borderlands 2 with a character like Brick in mind. It was like, everybody asked for it, so they gave him the psycho class, which was ended up being basically Brick ported.
Yeah, except without the rocket launcher ability.
Yeah.
The infinite rockets.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's... Yeah. I think I will end up spending money on that game if I play it some more.
It's pretty fun.
The game's worth the money. It keeps giving.
It is. It's been great so far. I think, I'm getting a hankering to go play it now.
I am kind of, too. But I have some other things on the agenda. Do you have anything else here, Jason?
No, the only other thing I did this week was finally watch Man of Steel.
How'd you feel about it?
I liked it. I liked it a lot.
My girlfriend likes the shit out of it. She made me buy it for her for Christmas, so I still need to watch
it. And watching it in Wolverine made me actually rethink my whole position on this. If I can let go of the quote Star Wars Expanded Universe canon and just accept the new movie for whatever it's going to be, comic geeks just need to let it go and accept the movies as separate universes and look at them in that frame of mind. And I think they would enjoy those movies a whole lot more.
I know some of our friends really hate that new Wolverine movie. I liked it pretty well.
The Wolverine? Or
yeah, the one that came out this summer.
Yeah.
I still need to see it. I need to see that Man of Steel.
Yeah, I still haven't seen Man of Steel, but me and a girlfriend went and saw it up at the drive-in, which I thought was an amazing drive-in experience because it felt, in some ways, kind of like an old 80s action movie. Like, it does not let up very much.
No.
But the only thing I'm worried about Man of Steel is just, you know,
I heard that gets really over the top at the end.
Well, not that. It's so much, you know, Batman came out. Batman Begins came out. And everybody loved the darker Batman. So, you know, virtually any superhero movie's got to be darker. And Man of Steel just seems like a Batman in a Superman outfit.
Man of Steel really wasn't darker. It just wasn't as playful as the films we grew up on.
But see, I liked Superman Returns. Outside of him being a stalker, a creepy stalker, like I enjoyed Superman Returns. I thought Brandon Routh was a great Superman.
I thought Ralph was good. The story was all right. Fucking Kevin Spacey nailed Luther. Loved it.
Yeah, but I just didn't like that movie.
But my problem was the rest of the cast.
Yeah.
And
yeah, Kevin Spacey's cool in that movie.
And the parts outside of Superman and Lex Luthor were not written very well. At all.
Well, so holding that next to the new movie way better?
Yes.
I'll check it out.
I almost rented it tonight. Almost. I had to go to the grocery store and I'm like,
Yeah. I mean, it's not like Batman Begins and The Dark Knight, world of difference. But it's close. And it's better.
Just all those previews seemed like it was just going to be him whining the entire time.
My only problem with the...
I'm awesome, but I can't do anything about it.
My only one problem with the movie was how much they tried to make Jor-El look like a badass in this, like, 15-minute action sequence at the beginning of the movie, but just because Russell Crowe was playing him, you know.
I don't really need to check this out. Yeah.
Yes, you do.
She's got it on Blu-ray, thanks to me, so I just need to go watch it.
I still need to see Wolverine Origins.
You don't.
Well, no, you don't.
No, well, no. It's only because I fear that, like, if I watch Wolverine, they may reference something in from Origins. And I'm like, I have no clue what that reference is.
I don't know if they do, but I tried to blank that out of my mind going into this.
They don't.
Okay.
The Wolverine actually takes place after X-Men United.
Okay.
So, which, like,
they kind of forget Origins themselves.
Yeah. So, like, his grief for having killed Jean Grey plays into the movie a little bit.
They do a pretty good job. I know some people have some gripes, you know, versus universe canon and things like that, but
well, yeah, and overall, that's the one thing I've always yelled at Peter's about. Whenever we went to go see the first Spider-Man, we went to see it together. And the entire time he was just, I'm like, dude, you can't fit 40 years of comic book history into a 2-hour movie. You're just going to have to get some stuff up.
The 45 minutes they used to build up the origin.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you can't, you know, this is saturated for a wider consumer base. So you're going to have to give up some of that.
But with the Wolverine, though, they did do good justice to that whole storyline where he went back to Japan and everything.
Yeah, but, they play on some of his origins in that, too.
Yeah.
They do a really good job of making, like, a guy... Like, the only thing he's ever badass in, making him extra badass. Without it seeming too hokey. Like, it's not all about his powers in the movie either. Like, a lot of it is just his own personal guile. You know, he's just a snake in the grass, you know? I mean, he just knows how to survive regardless of him being, you know...
Who he hurts.
Yeah. Like, and part of it, too, is he's not just like a caged animal the entire time. He's not just primitive the entire time. Like, there's a little bit to him, you know?
Yeah.
And he's got his own, you know, past and stuff like that, emotions he's dealing with. And there's a lot of character play between him and some of the other characters, but, yeah. Like, it felt like a really well-fleshed-out movie. And the ninja stuff is pretty badass, too. The ninja stuff didn't feel that hokey. It felt really cool.
Well, like, the more and more I see the previews for Days of Future Past, the more and more I kind of get a little excited about it.
Yeah, I'm a little bit excited about that, too. That looks pretty cool.
However, I did see that somebody posted a picture on Twitter about what the new Sentinels look like, and I'm not all too excited about that.
Are they like 11 feet tall or something like that?
They just looked weird. They looked like...
Is it as
like
as
a slimmed down version of the Pacific Rim guy? Like the way he had the hole in his. It looks.
Are
weird.
They doing him at least as big?
It looked as big.
I still need to see fucking Pacific Rim. That's how far.
I still haven't seen. Yeah.
That movie is awesome. There are a lot of people out there that don't like.
You're saying
it,
your days off are changing to Wednesday,
awesome.
Thursday, Friday.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
I'm off Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Maybe Thursday.
You're gonna watch some 3D Pacific Rim.
Watch me vomit all over everything.
Bring the Pacific together.
Because I think every time I turned on the DS, you know, if that slightest movement just messed with my eyes so hard. And I mean, it's almost you have to keep it that 16 inches away and perfectly still the entire time. So usually I just play everything with the damn 3D off and then make a huge difference. I mean, it sure adds depth, but like that's still depth from years of playing video game. I can see, you know.
I don't know. There's something a little bit natural but unnatural about like modern 3D technology that's still kind of I still kind of like. Like for a while before they patched it and fucked it up, Hitman Absolution had a 3D that you could turn on the PC, and playing that in 3D was like walking into the TV. Like, they did such a good job in the 3D. It wasn't just certain things were in 3D. It wasn't just certain things stood out. Everything was in fucking 3D, and it felt like you were looking, your TV was a window into another world.
Yeah.
Like, it was phenomenal.
But I can understand what Matt's saying. I don't think the technology's progressed far enough to really make
it worth
3D
it.
Worth it on, like, a handheld platform.
Yeah, I know. It's like, you know, you don't have to buy special glasses. It's all, you know, it's a
switch. Yeah, the glasses thing is kind of hard.
Yeah.
Because I wear glasses, you know.
The screen's just so small.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
And that's my main problem. It's like that cell phone that came out a few years ago from HTC that was, quote, 3D. Well, the screen's so small that the 3D just jacks with your eyes.
Yeah. I don't think it was that bad. I think I did end up seeing one of the Lord of the Rings in 3D. Like, I'd already watched it, but somebody wanted to go, and they were like, I'll pay for IMAX in 3D. And I was like, oh, if you're paying, I'll go. And it wasn't that bad, but...
I still haven't seen The Hobbit.
You need to watch it.
It's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Are you a fan of the original books, though? I know we're getting back into that conversation. But that's like one thing that I have a hard time with.
Okay, let me put it this way. I did nothing throughout my childhood except read those four books.
That was like part of my like permanent library as a child.
And
I've read The Hobbit probably 30 times.
When it comes down to The Hobbit, sure, there is some smaller detail that's left out just because you have to. Still to fit even that book into three movies. There's
what about Tom Bombadil? He's pretty much non-existent in the book, in the movie, isn't he?
They haven't gotten to that point in the movie yet.
Well, if we're at the Desolation of Smog, that would be past Tom Bombadillo. If we're talking about actually the dragon was the end of the book.
Well, he wasn't in the original one. Was he in the original books?
Tom Bombadillo?
He was in,
because they have the whole, like, midway through the journey, they hit the Barrowites. Tom Bombadillo saves them from no, that's after Tom Bombadillo. And after Gandalf introduces all the hobbits to the...
Where the movie left off was they had just gotten out of the mountains where they meet the Goblin King.
Right, and then it should pick up with, like, Mirkwood or something like that. It's been a while since I read it, but...
But that was the thing, is, like, I don't remember
a whole
lot of...
The end of the book, that's what I'm getting at. But if they're at the end of the book already, where the hell's Tom Bombadillo?
Yeah, well, they didn't have him in the original ones, because I think it was one of those things, it's part of those, you know, like any Harry Potter book or something. Okay. There's always those little bit of elements interesting. Well, yeah, but it doesn't
progress the story. Here's my thing. Tom Bombadil is an interesting character, yes, but I can accept his omission to the fact that he didn't really add a whole lot. That was more interesting story addition than it was that kind of colored some of it up versus being vital to the overall story. He just wasn't. You know, Tom Bombadil was a good character. He gave some good advice, but you can make the story without that.
I'll watch the movie.
But as far as everything else, though, all of the other omissions are of things that were so small that I didn't even notice it been omitted till I watched it through the second time.
Well, I rewatched the first Hobbit movie, which I'm still a little bit weirded out. They're doing three movies on a single book, but that just feels like cash grab to me.
But he's leaving so much more of the book in, though.
I'll check it out.
And that's the thing where I can justify paying to see three separate movies, is because he is fitting a whole lot more of the book in versus, say, The Two Towers.
Yeah, The Two Towers holds a lot left out. Felt like some of the battle scenes that were, like, or situations that were, like, several chapters were shortened down to, like, a single 10-minute scene, you know?
Well, and what happened to the whole journey from the capital of Rohan...
Right, they just skip over
Helm's Deep. I mean, they completely skipped over it except for the fact of Aragorn's separation from the group to go through the tombs.
Right, yeah.
Everything else was omitted.
It's funny that, like, that stuff is omitted, and I played when that came out, they had that RPG that was like Final Fantasy X that came out as Lord of the Rings based on PS2, and they, like, journeyed into a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
Which I remember, I don't know how good that game holds up now, but back then it was kind of cool.
It was fun. It wasn't anything great.
It was that Lord of the Rings game that was basically Final Fantasy X, but in a Lord of the Rings setting.
It was the Two Towers.
Yeah, it was Two Towers, I think.
Yeah, didn't you get to pick the characters?
Yeah, you got to play between
the main group, Aragorn, and, like, a side group.
You got to play, but mainly throughout the game, you got to play between Gimli, Aragorn, and Legolas. As far as the main character that you played,
and then you had Gandalf, which was like your white black mage.
Yeah,
but yeah, it was a weird game. I don't know how well it would hold up now that I've played a lot more games,
but
back in the day, that was kind of cool.
For The Hobbit, journey begins he kept so much of the book in and eliminated other stuff that was just kind of story color that I'm okay with it. I can accept that movie more so than the other three.
Right.
So, you know, and Desolation of Smog wasn't horrible either. Just saying.
So I'm going to move this podcast just a bit. We got off on some Hobbit talk. Anything else you did, Jason?
No.
Fair enough. I'm going to move into a few things I did, because I did play a lot, and I'm going to move them fairly quickly. But went to Chuck from Elseworld Podcast wedding. Ran into some old friends, all the people from that show. Had some fun. Got pretty drunk. Had a lot of fun. Congratulations, Chuck. Glad you and Nikki are married. That's pretty cool. Aside from that, though, I told listeners that I was going to beat the Banner Saga and play Rust. I did both of those things. Banner Saga, at the very end, is frustratingly hard. Incredibly hard. You can play through the whole game on normal. So, I'm going to give the game about a 4. And I'm going to say that based on one mechanic. You get your experience, which is called Renown, from doing battles and from key decisions you make along the story. And essentially, those that didn't listen last week, the Banner Saga is a game where you have a traveling caravan like Oregon Trail. And then you do these grid tactic style battles in between when you capture different villages or whatever, and then you get to equip your heroes and change your heroes' stats and things like that as they level up. Well, Renown is what they level up on, and each battle will give you, like, say, 10 or 15 Renown. Well, so it goes like this. Level 1 is 5 Renown, level 2 is 10, level 3 is 15, level 4 is 20, level 5 is 25 Renown. So that means that it essentially in 2 battles, you have enough Renown to get somebody to level 5. But you also need to use Renown to buy supplies for your caravan, and you also need to use Renown to buy items. So that goes really quickly. There needs to be bigger Renown rewards in that game, or they need to give you more Renown for some of the decisions you make along the way that have big impacts on your characters. So, that being said, there's a lot of good to be said about the Banner Saga. The game's fairly cheap. It's $20. It's about 10 to 15 hours worth of gameplay. The replayability is extremely high because, hey, it plays out like Oregon Trail, and people die based on your decisions. It's a very grim game with a very beautiful art style. It's basically Beauty and the Beast style art, but in a much more macabre setting. So, like, that quality of art, and not quite Disney style animation. Like, it's all animated, all the battles are animated, all the battles that you do and control are all animated, in just regular animation, which makes it look really good. But because it's whatever engine they're doing, it runs really light on the PC requirements. You can do anything you want in the background while it's running, but still looks extremely good. But yeah, so you'll make a decision and say you lose 25 people in your caravan, or you gain somebody and then he steals all your food, or whatever. The reason that factors in, though, is based on your morale. Your morale is based on how many people and how happy they are based on the decisions you are, and the morale affects what's called will. And when you're in a fight, say I want to do extra damage or do an ability, I have to use will. And I get more will if my people are happy. So if the people in my caravan are happy, then I'll do better in my battles. If they're not so happy, I won't get as much will. And you use the will kind of like an overdrive. So like if I spend 2 will points, I won't get them back unless I blow my horn, which I get more will based on how happy my people are. But it's just got some really weird mechanics when it comes to that. I just wish the Renown Wards were a little higher so I could have maxed out more of my characters. In the end, I only had 2 maxed out characters after 11 hours worth of gameplay. I get to this last boss battle, and it is, like, near unwinnable. I actually had to move the slider from normal to easy to get the last boss battle, because I spent 4 hours on it, and I was like, fuck, I'm coming back tomorrow. And I came back the next day, tried it 2 more times, could not win, and I was like, all right, I'm going on easy so I can beat this, because apparently it's the last boss.
But is there a way to go back and fight other battles? Like, can you go back and...
So it's based on days. So I spent 199 days in that game before I ended. A day takes about a couple minutes. But see, you're doing a lot of other things, a lot of conversations and battles that happen in between when you're traveling. But so it auto-saves about every 10 or 12 or 13 days.
Well, no, I mean, like, once you get to a certain point, you know, kind of like Final Fantasy Tactics.
You could roll
in
back.
Between, you can go back. Not like roll back days, but like go back to this area and fight bandits or... I mean, there's like no random battles that you can...
You do run into random battles, but you're always traveling in a straight line. Like, you don't pick where you're going. You just make decisions, and that kind of bases on where you're going to go in the map, in the world map. So, but what I did find out is there's two more parts they're creating for this game based on the success of the first game. First game did pretty well. Should be getting an announcement soon on what the development cycle is for two. Now, I'm talking about two different things, I know. I know you're shaking your head. There's something else I'm talking about later. I know what you're referencing. I read your mind. But no, there should be some kind of announcement coming soon as to what the dev cycle is going to be for Banner Saga Part 2. So eventually it'll be a three-part series, and you think about a three-part series that takes you, if it's the same, we're just talking rough numbers here, about 30 hours for a $60 game with the tag, split into three payments, you know, which is pretty decent, and the game itself is really good. Like, it's a really high recommend. It's just, it's, for me, because of that renown factor, that made it fairly difficult. And I can't even imagine how you'd play that on hardcore. Because they have a hardcore mode on that, and that just, that game's difficult enough as it is. It's brutal. But it makes you pay for decisions. Like, I mean, there are things, like, there's three decisions. They're all bad. Which kind of bad do you want to do? And you're not going to be able to predict it. But here's a way to lose one of your main characters really early in the game. You never get him back because you made a bad decision.
That kind of sucks, and it's kind of cool.
So, but yeah, that, like, there's a lot of permanent consequences to your actions. Like I might have said on the other one, or one of the shows we were talking about before, when I first started playing last week, like, there was a decision where I found an enemy baby. What do you do with a baby?
An enemy baby?
Yeah, I found an enemy baby in a dead mother's arms. And what do I do with it? Do I kill it? Do I leave it? Do I take it with me? Well, it's an evil creature, but it's a baby. What do I do with that?
I would take
I left it up to the council to vote because I didn't want to wash my hands of that decision because it sucked.
I would take the baby, raise it as one of my own, and then unleash it against its own kind.
Well, I'd wondered if maybe they would track me down because I did that.
That's just because that's what you wish you could do with your kids.
Well, yes, that's true too.
I'm just saying it was a weird decision. Like, and there's a lot of clutch decisions you got to make like that. There's no timer on it. It's not like The Walking Dead. It's just ticking away. But, like, it gives you, like, three or four or five really difficult decisions, and every one you make is going to have a consequence. That consequence could be immediate, or it could be way down the road, and it's a big decision way down the road. At the end of the game, you have some pretty crazy consequences for the choices you made 10 minutes prior. The only way to roll back is to go 30 minutes back on the game to where you started before, and I'm not going to go rolling 30 minutes back. So,
Wikipedia.
I read a little bit about what happens, but shows the other thing. They're both pretty rough. But I'm just saying, like, it forces you into those crazy, like, moral decisions, which a lot of games don't, to where you feel like there's a consequence for your action. It's not just click, 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 you know what I mean? Like, you can sometimes go through Mass Effect and just choose the quote-unquote right answer all the time and feel good about yourself. Like, it's very, fairly clear-cut as to what is going to be a Renegade or what's going to be a Paragon thing in Mass Effect, where this is just all shades of gray, which I thought was really just smart writing. So,
and it almost seems better than, like,
it makes it feel
Walking Dead.
It makes it feel more real. Yeah. So it's just, you know, they're like midway through the game, there's a decision that'll, like, make you wipe out an entire town, but the benefits are really good. And, like, there's things where it's like, I ran into a decision where it's bandits are attacking villagers. What do? You know, that's the short answer for what, or the short explanation. It's like, do you stop the bandits? They just offered you to take one of their supply wagons. So you could take the supply wagon and look the other way. You could take the side of the villagers and possibly add more people to your posse.
Or defeat the bandits and have them chase you later on.
That's what I'm saying. You could defeat the bandits, not get a supply wagon, and get more people to take on, which will cause your supplies to drop faster, but it would be the right decision, but just make games more hard. So I chose to buy them off and take the wagon and just look the other way because I really needed supplies at that point. My people had been starving for 4 days. So, like, it forces you into those kinds of decisions. So, and then that point, I was like, I feel kind of like a dirtbag, but I also want to preserve my people. So, and if I'd taken on more people at that point, they would have been even more starved. I've been losing more fighters. Like, and you also run into these big battles, so it'll force you into these decisions on what formation you're going to use. And say you have 450 fighters, 65 Varl. The enemy has 800 fighters. What do you do? At that point, I better like either retreat or draw battle formations and try to at least break down the enemy. And so what'll happen is then I'll go into that, you know, tactics-based battle. And because that was so vastly outnumbered, the enemy, no matter how I choose my action, is going to be fairly tough. And at the end of that, based on how well I do in the battles, how many fighters and how many Varl I use and how many villagers I lose off that tactic. So if I'm just, there's a lot of smart stuff in it. It's just that renown system. It just needs tweaking. And so, like, I don't know if I should go with a 4 or 4.5. Like, it's a pretty awesome game, except for the way that renown works. You and know, that last boss.
There's got to be a better way to. I mean, there's probably something you're still overlooking. To me, because it seems like it's very kind of, and maybe that's a part of it. Maybe that's just something you're not seeing. To me, it's like maybe that's part of the.
I kind of
like,
feel
do
like,
you do you only put all your renown in one character, or do you split it up and
like I kind of like, feel kind like of after playing
field, or
I've played it 2 times through now and only beat it once, but got into that last fight and said I was too underpowered, and then did it again. Not realizing it was the last boss battle. And I kind of feel like at this point I should have just focused on my original party of 6 or the people I really wanted to level and just maxed them out and then left everybody else to be kind of my fill-in characters while they were healing. Because you don't have permadeath except for certain situations. So like if somebody falls in battle, they're not dead. It's just that it may take them 3 days to recover before they. And if you take them out while they're still recovering, they'll be low on health. So, which means they also do less damage because their health is also their damage modifier. So, like, say they have 7 health, they also do 7 damage.
Well, that kind of sucks.
See, in that in that situation, you just need to take your cue from What's-His-Face in The Walking Dead and just kneecap the fat boy and leave him behind.
Yeah.
Just saying. And you shouldn't feel bad. Again, take it from Rick Grimes' playbook. Sometimes you have to be a dirtbag and then cry about it later.
So, Banner Saga's cool. It's really good. It's one of the best games I've played so far this year. Probably one of the best games I've played in 6 months. I'm enjoying it because it's so much different. The complete breath of fresh air to everything you're playing right now. There's not a lot of grid-based tactics games that look... There's no grid-based tactics game except for XCOM that looks as good. Played a little bit of that, though. I'll brief on that. Me and John played some multiplayer matches the other night, so we wouldn't be playing Warframe. So, John from the Carousel. I was like, alright, let's jump into XCOM. So, we jumped into Enemy Unknown. He hadn't played the patch. And, fortunately for me, I knew the mechanics of the new units, and I kind of rape-faced with him. But, I felt a little bit bad because he didn't legitimately know all the classes and how they played out as well as I did. And I didn't remember going in, and then after I figured out, I was like, oh, yeah, I know what I'm doing now. So, I feel a little bit bad about that, which is why we quit playing after a little while, just chatted. Because I felt like I was getting to that point where, you know, the other person's just like, yeah, I'm being nice because we're friends, but, man, this sucks.
So, yeah, I know.
You know how it goes. Like, I've played, like, 7 matches.
It sucks raping your face all the time.
Yeah, I've played, like, Hearthstone with you, and I get, like, annihilated for 8 matches. Like, I'm ready to play something else for a while. I'm sick of being killed by, you know... It's like when you're playing Street Fighter with somebody who really knows how to play Street Fighter and they kick your ass like over and over and over again with like E. Honda or somebody's. Or like Chun-Li, like some ridiculous character.
Never had that problem with Street Fighter. Killer Instinct, though.
But,
yeah. So, I watched a little bit of that. I get on Twitch every now and then and watch the little fighting tournaments they have on there.
The new one's actually pretty good. I like a lot of the character models.
Except you have to pay for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been thinking. I have a $20 card. I've been thinking about throwing a Killer Instinct for a while, but I'm just waiting to see what else comes out before I throw down $20 on it. Because I know I have nobody that I'm going to play Killer Instinct with. It's a multiplayer only game, so I'm just like, well, you know, I don't think Trent's going to get it. I don't know.
And that's a hard part. I mean, you know, like it's one thing. It's to me, it's one thing to like Dota. Here's all your fighters. You can buy the skins. That's great. I don't mind. But to take... And I know only hardcore people are going to front the money for that. Hardcore fighting people are going to front the money for it. But to release a game with only 2 characters and you have to buy the rest? That's...
It's really just like... There's a demo that you can play with all your friends that have the game Now you want all the other characters because you're sick of playing Jago or an Orchid or whatever. Is it? It's not Orchid. It's Saberwolf, isn't it?
I think.
Yeah, Jago and Saberwolf.
Yeah, and that and that's what sucks is like you know I don't know because it's you know I always get stuck in that I find one character I'm really good at, which is saying not very at all. But I usually stick to that character, and then I try other characters. And I never feel, if I play against anybody else, that I'm as good as I am with that one character. So, thus, I've spent however much money for all the other characters, and I'm still playing Jago. You know what I mean? Cause, right, like, because that's the only one I can play. So, I feel like I'm moderately good at it. So, if I go and spend however much money it is to buy the other characters, and I try the other characters, I feel like I'm crap.
Well, see,
so, I end up playing Jago all the time.
I only know two people that are playing that game right now that are on my friends list. One of them works on Mortal Kombat, and he's fucking amazing at fighting games. I don't want to play him on that game. Because the last time I tried to play Mortal Kombat with me, he just laughed at me. And the other guy is Travis, but catching him online with his schedule is just...
Yeah, but you might play him in Killer Instinct. Reason being is, combo breakers are a whole lot easier now.
Yeah, that guy knows... That guy knows fighting games. I'm not going to go against him again on a fighting game.
Yeah, you never know. One good uppercut somewhere.
No, I guarantee you he has that game memorized inside and out. Probably knows what the latency is between each of the controls. It's just ridiculous.
Which I heard about that. There's something different. Like, the way they have that whole cloud-based gaming set up, like, what you see on your screen is can sometimes be vastly different with the guy you're playing against sees.
The latency that bad, or...?
It's just the way they have that whole infrastructure set up. Like, it'll show you beat him, but somehow you lost.
I haven't heard that yet.
I've heard a few stories about that, so...
So I want to talk about a couple more games real quick. Play a little bit of Super Mario, the new one. That game seems pretty solid. Me and Jason were actually just playing before the podcast.
I enjoy it.
Feels a lot like Mario 3, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It with the co-op play, too, is
it
pretty frenetic. And like, you have to be moving fast, but we've died like 7 times or 8 times in that one spot.
It's like Mario 3 mixed with Super Mario DS that came out when the DS launched. It's got that kind of feel to it.
Well, it's just, it's pretty fast paced. It looks really good. Runs really smooth.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it's a first party game. They know what they're doing with Mario. But it doesn't feel like a garbage Mario game. Like there hasn't been a whole lot of great Mario games that have come out. Like, the 2D one that I got before that is pretty decent. I can loan that to you. It's not bad. This one feels like head and shoulders above it, though. Like, it really feels like classic meets modern Mario in a good way. And I can't wait to beat the rest of it. Like, the boss battles, too, are not... Aside from the mini-boss we did was really easy.
Yeah.
Like, the Bowser fights, like, there was one where he was chucking bombs at me, and then he was riding on the back of a car. I had to, like, snag the bombs, throw them back at him, and blow his car up. It wasn't 3 hits like the other games. It was, like, a good 12 or 13 hits of me avoiding some bombs, grabbing some bombs, and like towards the middle of the fight he starts one fire, so like it gets even a little bit more frantic, and that's one of the early Bowser fights, and it felt more creative than the other Mario games. Of course it's a fucking acid trip, it's just Mario, but the controls feel fairly tight, the models look amazingly good, you know, they're just taking simple shapes and making them look really really good, but it just has a really good old feel to it in a good way, and it's hard.
Kind of like that Zelda.
Like, it's hard.
Yeah.
Not too hard, but it's hard. Hard enough to be considered a game that could be hard enough for somebody who wants a hard game, you know what I mean? But not too easy either. Like, it's definitely, like, it gives you some grace when he died all the way, it just gave him 5 lives. I don't know why, but we were playing Call of Duty. Like, he just got 5 lives. 5 lives up. Whatever.
Oh, but, yeah, because it is the game that the more you suck at it, the easier it gets.
Yeah, and the better you get, the harder it gets.
Yeah.
Like, it tunes itself. So, it's pretty interesting. I really like it. I think I'm going to play some more of it. And it's good for, like... So, like, I'll come here on lunch break. And I just got it last week. But I came up on lunch break the other day. And I was like, I just want to play something for a few minutes. So, I beat 2 different worlds in about 20 minutes. And I was like, that felt really good. I made progress. Like, measurable progress in this world. And I can come back later and play this again. And that's a really nice feature for an adult gamer, you know, that has limited time on gaming. And I don't always have limited time. But, like, tonight... When we get done with this podcast, I'll probably play something a little bit before I go to bed. It might be Mario, because
I think I have that.
Have what?
Yeah. You were asking me earlier what I had. I think I was trying to remember what I had in there. I think it is that Mario game.
Did I lie to you?
No, it came with it.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, I think I have that one. I think I was playing it.
It's pretty decently hard too. But so yeah, Mario. Mario's good. Couple other things I want to touch on though. Rust and 7 Days to Die. Played a lot of Rust. Still very much alpha. I think that playing it PvE first is probably the best way to do it. Because I've gotten really good at crafting and surviving. The first couple of days in that game are extremely difficult. So here's kind of like my strategy so far for new players. I didn't really just explain Rust. Rust is a survival crafting game. It is DayZ meets Minecraft. That's the best way of saying it. Sort of. It's more DayZ than it is Minecraft. But you got to go out and collect resources, and it's the world has some zombies in it, but not a lot. Like, the zombies aren't the main focus. Really, the main focus is once you learn how to do it and play PvP, the players are your biggest enemy. And so the players basically is playing as bandits. And you go out and gather supplies. You're naked. You have a rock. You go out and you cut down a tree or gather some wood. Like, the first thing I do is go out and craft a stone axe. So my first 10 minutes of the game, I'm looking for a piece of stone that I can break down to make the stone axe and then a tree. So I can make that stone axe, because then everything goes like twice as fast. And then I'm out looking for food, because you only have 2 days worth of food, worth of calories, basically, before you die from starvation. And so you run out of calories, and that's what provides you with food. Anyways, moving along from Rust, talk a little bit about 7 Days to Die. 7 Days to Die is the last game I was going to talk about, and that game is essentially Minecraft meets a zombie game. I've actually been having a lot of fun with it. It's in extreme alpha right now, but they've updated it pretty regularly. I think me and Matt on before the show were talking about possibly getting it. I think me and Matt may record a stream going forward. But essentially the game is you have the 7 Days to Die thing is just a reference. It doesn't mean you die in 7 days. You go around scavenging cars and vehicles and trash bags and everything else during the day to get some weapons and some food and water to survive during the night. You have 4 meters. You got your stamina, your hydration, your food, and your health. And the stamina, of course, is affected by your running and attacking and things like that. And food is just basic calorie burning. But it's somewhat open world. It's not procedurally generated. The world is as it is when you get in the game. They've talked about making it procedurally generated. But long story short, everything's destructible. So, like, you go out and you destroy a tree. You just cut it at the trunk and the whole tree falls down. And then you gather all the wood to make other things. The crafting system is fairly intuitive. Once you build something once, it remembers what it is. You just click on it and it builds it. And it's just based on if you have the materials to do it. But, and that's kind of how you discover things, is just by experimentation. So you need to make a shovel. It's basically the shape of a shovel, kind of like Minecraft. You got a shovel, now you can move dirt. Everything's got a structural integrity, so like if you're playing on a, if you're in a house and the zombies chew through the bottom of it, it will make the house collapse. But essentially that game is pretty fun so far. It doesn't look great, but it doesn't really take a great looking game to be good. It's just
that's
like
true.
Better Minecraft is really what it looks like. But it's got a lot better zombies. Like, the zombie AI is not amazing, and they don't look amazing. Some of the animation's a little weird. Some of the clipping's a little weird. But the basic premise of how the game works is you go out and scavenge during the day to get your supplies and fortify your base. And then at night, you survive the night, essentially. And surviving the night is actually fairly difficult. Prior to the last patch, the zombies couldn't climb anything aside from stairs, so you just destroy the stairs and you'd be fine all night. They just, you know, unless they destroyed enough of the walls to cause the house you're in to collapse, or the structure you built to collapse. Now the zombies can climb, so you have specific ones that don't need a ladder. They can climb up walls and things like that, so you have to build a lip on the wall to keep them from climbing over. And then all the rest of the zombies can actually climb up a ladder. So you could have one kink in your defenses, essentially, and they come up and, you know, overload the roof that you're on, and if you get enough of them on the roof, they'll actually collapse the whole damn building, which is pretty awesome and pretty terrifying.
So in other words, a lot of people were surviving and they said, ganked.
Yeah, and it was a Kickstarter project that actually got it. I think the name of the company is like the Fantastic Pimps or the something Fun Loving Pimps or something crazy like that. But essentially, it's just like two. It's a very small company, but they seem to be doing some really cool things. And for a small ass indie game like that to actually be that fun, like, amazes me. Not that indie games can't be fun, but it just initially looking at screenshots and stuff like that did not sell me on that game. I was actually watching some people do gameplay videos and watching like how crazy things get that made it look fun to me.
Because see, I know the one level I really always loved in Left 4 Dead on the first one was the very last one at the house.
Oh, surviving the house was intense.
Yeah, and I played, what was it, Dead Rising?
Yeah.
And I never felt...
You never feel like you're in any real danger, to be honest with you,
in Dead Rising. Right, but like in Left 4 Dead 1, especially at that house, just because it's just mass confusion, like you think you got something set up, and then you're getting eaten from behind.
But the difference with Left 4 Dead is you don't set traps.
Right.
And there is no trap building to be done. And this is all about traps. Like, I plan on going back to that gas station that I survived the night on and digging a trench, filling it with spike traps so that they can't get through, and then surviving the night that way. But to counter me just staying on the roof, they've actually built in a couple of flying enemies. Or one flying enemy, these gigantic mutated hornets come and can kind of crash your shit, so to speak. And they hurt a lot, but they also drop honey, so you can survive with the honey they drop.
Yeah.
They give you a lot of weapons, but all the weapons have durability, even your gun. So you fire out enough shells out of your gun, durability goes down, and it's no longer as effective as it was, but you can repair it with other guns. And they're very generous with the amount of weapons that they give you, to be honest with you. It's just that if you have 55 zombies and it's mass chaos in the middle of the night and they're running at your house and trying to kill it, or trying to eat through your walls, like, it gets fairly terrifying, even though they're low-rendered, you know, fucking zombies. There's just so much crazy shit going on. Like, I don't know, it's, you know, it's no Call of Duty style shooting. Like, the shooting mechanics in this game are not great. It's just, it's fun. It's kind of funny too, because like, it looked like I had 8 shotgun shells. Well, 8 shotgun shells was actually 8 magazines of shotgun shells, so 5 rounds each or something like that.
Nice.
So I found that right off the bat, a shotgun with like half durability and like 8 shotgun shells, but no melee weapons. So I could go around killing every zombie I see, or only kill them when necessary, which is what I end up doing. Then I'm going into a house, blocking off the door, killing the rare roaming zombie that knew I was in there, and after a while of shooting zombies, they found out where I was at. Pretty soon, even though they were in the day and walking slow, like I had a significant horde going, like 15 or 20 of them at my house. So I blocked off the house. This is like my first night. I go up the stairs, block out all the windows so they can't climb through the windows, even on the upper stairs, and essentially the zombies destroyed the rest of the house. So that game's fairly decent. Yep. I highly recommend it. You can get things like rocket launchers and MP5s and all sorts of crazy weapons. On top of crafting your own weapons like a bone shiv or a hunting knife or a crossbow or any number of things. But essentially sometime soon I think I'm going to start a Tiltcast live stream for when we're doing stuff like this. Multiplayer or kind of delving into the unknown, and I'll just throw it up on the Tiltcast Twitter when we're doing stuff like that. It'll be kind of random, but maybe we'll start doing more of that stuff, because I know you really like live streaming stuff, Matt. You can just throw your stuff up there. We'll just throw you the account info, but just that way you guys can see some of the stuff we're talking about, especially with an alpha game. Like, I really can't rate this or Rust yet because they're still so new. But anyways, barring any more audio snafus, I think I'm going to call for a break, and we'll come back with some news. You guys all right with that?
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, we'll be right back. Second half after an extremely frustrating recording for us. Hopefully not for you guys. It's got to be about the A3 start.
It definitely is now, yeah.
Yeah, and part of that is just due to complications with my computer, and I apologize in advance to Trent as he snips this together. So anyways, long story short, the recording keeps stopping. And hopefully it's fairly seamless, but we'll just see how good that happens. Anyway, so we're going back for our second half after our very short break. Talk about some news stories and get into our question. And what was our question last week?
our question last week was, with lackluster sales from Nintendo's Wii U, what do you think the future of that console is? Our single response on Facebook was from Eric Lincolns, and he said, without a Smash Brothers or Metroid or even a new Mario for the system, sales will be low. Parents will keep buying the system for kids, but it won't help enough to make the system actually profitable. And I'm cutting over to Twitter.
Actually,
and no, your response didn't show up on my Facebook. I don't know why.
Well,
actually, I think,
well,
Scott,
I think I did enter Tiltcast.
Scott, I think did a pretty fairly long response to it.
If it did, I didn't. It wasn't pulling up on my phone.
He made it as a
phone.
Separate post.
That explains
why. Scott linked a story, and then he said, short answer, if they got into too much, and that's Scott from Carousel and sometimes on this show as well, said, short answer, if they get into too much trouble, Bill Gates will try to buy them out again. But one needs to look at their liquid assets and cash on hand. They tend to start testing the next unit's concepts in the dev process of the current unit. So if they're doing okay on money, then they'll have probably two generations of consoles left available to them at minimum. And so he's kind of referencing the story of the GameCube and things like that, kind of how that went strong for a little bit and then just kind of petered out.
Yeah.
Fairly tight summary. Especially for Scott, man, that's a really fast summary.
Kind of echoes what we were saying last week when we brought up the question.
Yeah, I think my thing is, I think they just need a really solid SIP, like Lincoln's of Sand. Let's throw out a really good Metroid game or a really good Zelda game. Get the fan base back into it. Get the fan base going strong. I mean, the Mario game that's out for it right now is good. It's just there's Wii has Mario saturation. I mean, that is probably the best Mario game I've played since Mario 3. But there is Mario saturation in that market. We don't need any more Mario games. We need to do something. We haven't done a Metroid game in forever that was good. We haven't done a Zelda game in modern graphics for a long time, aside from Wind Waker or the Wind Waker remake. Like, they need to take and make a game for that system, invest some money, and then pull up maybe subsidize another contractor.
Yeah, and I don't want a wimpy Zelda. I want you to keep going with the feel that you captured in Twilight Princess. Keep that going.
I agree. Though some people definitely don't agree, but I really like the more adult Zelda with real consequences, you know, not just saving Zelda. Like, go a little bit deeper into that story, make it a little bit more serious, make the dungeons a little scarier, like, give me something, like, I mean, we grew up with Zelda.
Yep.
So, at this point, we're adults playing a kid's game. I don't want to be adults playing a kid's game, I want to be adults playing a real game. Not that like, Mario's a kid's game still, too, but, like, it's technical enough, it's hardcore and cool. I just want Zelda to kind of step away from that Nintendo-esque side of it and maybe go the darker path they did with Twilight Princess. No gritty reboot, but just, you know, a little bit more modern.
Yep. Agreed.
That being said, we will think of a question as we're talking about news stories.
Yeah. Another side effect of our recording was is we completely forgot to talk about question.
But it's midnight, 30.
So I'll go ahead and blow through my news real quick because it's short. Sales figures are finally out for the Xbox One and PS4 through December 31st. And Microsoft shipped 3.9 million units, and Sony shipped 4.2 million units. Considering a week's difference and a little bit higher price tag, I'd say that puts both of them pretty close to in line.
That's already outsold the Wii U, huh?
Oh, yeah. Both of them have already blown the Wii U out of the water. But
yeah, I think the Wii U's is still like maybe 3 million units now.
Yeah.
A year in.
Yeah. That said, I mean, each console's always going to have its lovers and its haters, but really, people at this point, quit trying to prove which one's better, because there's not a whole lot done with them yet, so.
Well, I was going to say, there was a story that I was actually just reading during the break about The Witcher 3 maxing out the next-gen consoles.
Yeah.
And pushing it to the max, and actually, they completely skipped out on the dev cycle for 360 and PS3. Because they didn't think it would do the game justice to develop for those platforms. So they jumped straight to next-gen consoles and PC to develop that game. And they're saying like there's like 36 endings and 100 hours of gameplay.
Well,
and being that it's a Witcher in a little bit more open environment with more side quests and things like that, I'm on board for Witcher 3.
Well, and even then, I mean, look at... That's kind of their MO. I mean, look at how far they pushed everything with Witcher 2.
It still takes a beast of a machine to run that at full settings.
Yeah. And, I mean, they taxed the PS3 with that game almost as much as The Last of Us taxed it. Well, not it quite as close.
It didn't run,
but
they didn't have a PS3. It was only
or, I mean, on the 360, yeah.
Yeah, it still looks pretty good on the 360, but...
It pushed it far, but PC did look better.
Oh, PC is amazing, but I still can't max it out. And I got a pretty high-end machine. I mean, it's not the highest as you can go. I'm not running a Titan card. I'm running a 660 Ti.
Yeah.
I'm running on, you know, an i7 and 8 gigs of DDR3 at like 1666 megahertz or whatever, 1667, I can't remember. Anyways, I'm running on a pretty decent specs to run pretty much anything. And that game still runs pretty hard. On my system. It's still going. Don't worry. Other news stories.
And then my other piece of news was just that Respawn has confirmed that they will be doing a port to the Xbox 360 of Titanfall. Don't ask me how that's going to work, and they haven't given a release date for that version yet.
We'll see. It seems fun so far. I will say that there was an acquisition recently for the Gears of War franchise by Microsoft's own in-house studio, Black Tusk Studios, formerly known as Microsoft Vancouver. They're going to have Rod Ferguson, one of the creative leads for the original IP, moving over there to help them with that game and do some quality control. It's a fairly unproven studio. We'll just kind of see how it turns out, but if they do another Gears of War 3, I'll be happy. 343 seems to have taken the mantle of Halo very well.
Yeah.
I don't see... I mean, I'm not going to judge until I see the final product. Again, with these like annual products like this, like sometimes it's hard to see the difference. It's just like when... what was the name of that studio? It's not Crystal Dynamics, but Mercury Steam took over the Castlevania franchise.
Yeah.
Did an amazing job, and it was like the only franchise they own right now.
I love Lord of Shadows.
Yeah. And that's a pretty badass game. And the next one's coming out here in a month. I'm really looking forward to it.
I can't wait.
So, you know, sometimes when this kind of thing happens, it's not necessarily a bad thing. Which actually leads me to a question, and then I'll jump to Matt's news. And this will give us a topic of discussion. How do you feel about smaller studios like this taking over a major IP? Do we need to keep doing that kind of thing where we continue an IP? Or do you think, well, no, let me back that up. How do you feel about things like Microsoft or Sony taking over a franchise like that just to keep a major IP on the system?
You know what? As
just like they did with Halo and they did with
My feeling is as long as it's not overdone. So you can't do it with every IP because you don't want to oversaturate the market. But I can definitely see it with exclusive IPs like Halo, like Gears of War for Sony, say Uncharted. You know, doing something like that, as long as the quality stays up with like what Halo 4 was for 343, I'm good with them doing stuff like this.
As long as they don't like try and wrangle... Let them be their own studio and not be like, well, we want you to do it this way. You know, let the company, if you're going to give it to somebody in hopes that they're going to make a good product, let them try and make a good product. Don't try and, you know,
tie their hands.
Yeah, tie their hands and have them do it one way, and you have to have it out before the end of the year and all this other stuff. Like, give them a year, let them do their thing.
So what you're saying is don't let them lead the horse to water. Just let them find it on their own.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you're going to take and give a company a popular franchise like that and then force them into a corner on how they do it, it's going to be a crappy game. Like, nobody's going to like it. They're going to not like the studio, you know, and that's going to backlash on them pretty heavily. Whereas if you let them make their own game with their own story, with their own characters, maybe reference some of the older Gears of Wars or something, kind of keep it canonical, then they can make a really decent game.
Yeah.
I think my thing is I'd like to see some more new IPs rather than continuing on with, you know, Gears of War 4 or 5 at this point. Rather than continuing on with, you know, fucking God of War 27, you know. Or another Mario. Like, at my point, like, I want to see a new IP for Nintendo. I want to see a new IP for Microsoft. I want to see a new IP for Sony. You know, I want to see some new stuff. Like, even Valve, like, I'm really looking forward to what they do next, you know. Like, Half-Life 3 is never coming out. We know this. You know, let's move on. They're not going to, I don't really think we need to do another Left 4 Dead or another Portal or another Team Fortress or another Dota. Like, they need a new IP. Like, Dota was basically a borrowed IP at this point, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They just improved on it, gave the dude that was making Dota some money and said, hey, continue what you're doing. We'll find a way to make this profitable. And they did. But, you know, we just need to find something else. But, obviously, we all have different opinions.
But, to that same token, exactly what Microsoft has done with Bungie, what they're going to be doing with Epic, as far as purchasing these major titles and letting the studio, you know, go off on their own without a contractual obligation for the title, that frees them up to create a new IP. So you're getting a major studio that did make a hit and sustain that hit for a long time, move on to new things.
So that is, I'm going to kind of close it right there because I'm scared about the recording stopping yet again. Matt, you had one more news story?
The makers of Candy Crush Saga are trying to trademark the words Candy and Saga, which oddly enough runs into your Banner Saga. Because they're trying to trademark it to, which is a legitimate claim, to
control quality.
Control their clones, like their IP. They're trying to protect their IP on it.
Well, I would say as long as Candy and Saga aren't in the title, I'd be alright. Candy
but
and Saga together, but not separate.
They actually sent, their lawyers sent out cease and desist orders against some random developer guy was trying to make Candy Slot something casino. It was some weird off the wall. It's just single guy, indie developer, making no money really off of this. And they sent him a cease and desist, and he had to change the name to something else. And they actually are in a fight with the guys from Banner Saga because they're trying to trademark Saga, and they're trying to get it to where the next Banner Saga that comes out is not going to be able to use the word Saga in it.
Banger, the Banner, that's just part of the name. They can't do that. That's,
yeah, well, I've been reading a lot of over the trademark stuff and all this, and it's anything that gets put out before the trademark is either filed or finalized gets to keep the name. But as long as, like, Banner Saga, like, if they go to trademark Banner Saga 2, King.com, or the guys, King, that make the Candy Crush, can put a, basically an injunction against them using the name Saga because they think it will confuse people between Candy Crush Saga and Banner Saga.
Really?
Yes. So they can actually stop them from using Saga.
That's fucking idiotic.
Yeah, but the people from Banner Saga are like, no, we're going to fight them 100% of the way, because that's...
Good, they should.
Because you can't technically copyright common names, but you can copyright them in terms of, like, being used in a title that would confuse a consumer into thinking they were getting...
Yeah, there's no way Candy Crush Saga. You confuse Candy Crush with Banner Saga. Like, those games are so different.
But
what's a time waster? That's
once again. Right, but that, you know what? That's a legitimate. It is legitimate, but they're also using it in a way to, like, I was, because we've been having a conversation on the Carousel Facebook page about this, and I liken it to bully tactics on trying to keep you know, they're going to try and use it to force indie developers into a hole so that they couldn't develop a game. So that way their name is always up there and not somebody else that makes Super Candy Factory.
Right.
You know, and then on the heels of this, it turns out that King actually got with an indie developer to make a game called Scamper Ghost. And I guess they got what they needed out of him, fired the guy, and then stole the entire game and renamed it Packavoid.
Wow.
And actually posted it to, like, the iTunes store and stuff.
Fuck those guys.
Yeah, and immediately after he released that information, said, no, I developed this game first, I worked with them, they kind of stole my code and stuff, they immediately took it down. And so a lot of people are fighting King over this. Like, I think even the Banner Saga people were like, we're going to make a, like, a development brain trust or something, like a conference, and they're going to name it, like, Candy something just to piss them off.
Good for them.
Yeah, so, like, I think Candy is, Candy Crush, the King, the Candy Crush Saga people are kind of overstretching their boundaries at this point, and I've always hated Candy Crush. Anytime I see anybody play it, I give them crap about it, because it's just, it's a bad game, it's a new Farmville.
It's one of those time waster games that just does nothing but steal your money.
Yeah.
It makes video games look bad.
Yeah, it's just a, there's nothing, it's fun to kill time, yes, but it's nothing
life-changing.
It's not a Zelda, it's not a...
And it's obvious that the heads of King are complete and utter douchebags.
Yeah, so...
So, fight them.
Yeah. And on top of that, like sometime like half a year ago, I guess it was mentioned that it may be possible that they've actually developed the game to cheat in order for you to spend the money to buy the extra lives and stuff. Because there were times when several people have posted, I guess, on several things where they had clearly finished the level that they were working on, scored all the objectives to beat it, and then it said they still lost and they would have to end up buying, like, special items to beat it again. And
yeah, that's just a load of horseshit.
Yeah. So, in light of all this, like, it's, there, it seems like if they keep pissing off enough of the gaming community, they'll turn pretty rabid on them and pretty much destroy King.
I just hope the rest of the gaming community just stops feeding into that stuff. Well, some of us are such game addicts anyway, like, even the legitimate gamers will buy stuff like that, you know, and just like, no, don't do it, don't support them.
Yeah.
Which was one of the reasons
I... And then the hard part is, you know, like I said, it's another Farmville, so you got a lot of women and single moms and...
Well, I don't want to necessarily stereotype that group, but...
Yeah, but it like, there are, like, as long as they keep, if, as long as they,
as long
stay
as
in the dark.
Facebook game.
It's the bejeweled crowd.
Yeah,
it's, you know,
they're, as long as they're going to be there, they're going to be around, and that's the hard part, because you want to see these guys punished for what they're doing. But the people that play, like, Bejeweled and Farmville and Candy Crush, who are naive on what's happening, they're still going to be around.
So, moving along a little bit as we get to the end of the show, and hopefully don't have to start again. One more quick announcement for the people that followed Shadowrun Returns. The announcement for that game should come out on Tuesday. We're going to be releasing this later this week, so it may have already been out. So that game is coming out extremely soon. So, also, last but not least, sometime in the next few days, there should be an upgrade for Kickstarter backers of Wasteland 2 to get into the beta for $10. Brian Fargo announced that in the last update that was about 10 days ago, that before the end of the month, they're going to give an option for people that originally backed it at the tier right below Alpha Access that paid $50 like I did, would be able to pay the $10 extra and get into the beta. Which I thought was cool. Obviously, I didn't start. There was a shitload of people that were bitching about it before I was. But I think it's just, I was on the same brain level, or brain, you know, the same brainwave as everybody else was, like, hey, these people that had nothing to do with starting up your game are now getting into it for $60 on Steam. They don't get the same rewards, but I got to wait, and I get to play the beta. why don't you give me an option? I'll give you $10 to play that beta if you'll just let me pay you money. But I'm not going to pay $60 to get a separate copy of the game so I can play the beta. Because I didn't get that last reward tier 2 years ago, you know, on the Kickstarter. Like, I feel like that's only fair at this point to open that up to people.
And if you're listening, sir, thank you.
Hey,
because I no longer have to hear him bitch.
Well, and if anybody knows anything about me from listening to this show, like, I'm honestly, I don't think I should be the one to review this game because I'm a Brian Fargo fanboy. And I openly admit that I'm a Brian Fargo fanboy. I love Fallout 1 and Fallout 2. I love Wasteland. You know, I've already bought like 4 Wasteland t-shirts on top of backing the fucking Kickstarter. Like, before I bought the game, like, yeah, I'm the worst person to review this in that way that I'm not going to give a fair review. To the point of somebody else should play it, you know, on my Steam family sharing once it comes out to give it a review. Because I'm going to be, unless it's broken, probably giving it, you know, 40,000 stars out of 4 because I like that developer.
Don't worry, I'm sure Rusty or I will play it.
But that being said, we're coming to the end of the show. Keep that question in mind. How do you feel about, try to summarize that in so many words, with original IPs being continued, how do you feel about those original IP? I'll summarize a little bit better. Go.
You're summarizing horribly.
I'm tired.
With Microsoft's purchase of the Gears of War franchise from Epic, do you think this is a good idea for these console owners to purchase their major IPs from the studios in order to keep them going while the studios move on to make something else?
Thank you, Jason.
You're welcome.
All right, so with that, find me and Rusty while we reconfigure Gauntlet on Dota Wednesdays at 7 o'clock Central Time. Me or him or both of us together will be playing Dota from about 7 to 11 Central Time. We had a couple of really good games. We found Random Gamer that jumped in and friended us on Steam from, I guess, Jason, friend of the show from World of Warcraft days. Told one of his buddies about it that played Dota. He's like, hey, these group of guys are playing. You should play them. He friended us and started playing Dota with us on Wednesdays and said he'll do it every Wednesday. So, Emma, you're pretty cool. And we did really good. We got griefed really hard on the last match, which is something that never happened in Dota. Not to scare you away, this is the only time I've played 200 hours of Dota, or approximately 200 hours of Dota. Never had this happen, but we had a team that was kicking our ass really bad, and we just wanted to get to the end and get it over with. We were losing graciously. We weren't calling them names, but in general chat, they were talking shit. At the very end of the game, before the game ended, they paused the game like 8 times. So me and Rusty and this guy, like, reported everybody on there. But, yeah, that's never really happened before. It did happen that time. But we will continue to play it till we get better. Because the other two matches we had prior to that were amazing. So, keep that in mind, Dota Wednesdays. Also find us at tiltcast.com. Find us at teabag@tiltcast.com. Find us on Stitcher and iTunes.
Way to butcher that.
Search
email us at teabag@tiltcast.com.
Find us on facebook.com/tiltcast and twitter.com/tiltcast. Find friends of the show, elsewordspodcast.com, as we mentioned earlier. Find noquarters.net and
bmfcast.com
for the love of gaming and the Carousel Podcast, as well as tvgp.tv, they do good things. And I am running out of steam. So with that, we're going to close the show out, record the intro, and get the fuck out of here. And hopefully that doesn't fuck up. We'll see you guys later next week, and hopefully after I reinstall Windows, this will not be a problem.
Bye. See you guys.